is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Jim Saras from the Saras Skills Academy, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. During the 2022 NBA Finals, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 22% off all software packages. Just use the code CHAMPION22 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at HoopheadsPod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Coach, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave their success and your team's success to chance, or you may end up disappointed. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each year so they can discover how to think the game, lead your team, and run the show. They'll send them back to you a smarter player, a better leader, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in the locker room. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a camp near you. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Lensing here with my co-host Jason Suckle tonight. And although we had some great intentions to do a quick show after each of the first two games,
life got in the way, right?
Life got in the way. So here we are after game two, previewing game three. Where do we start?
When you say life got in the way, it made me think of Jurassic Park. Life finds a way, Jurassic World coming out this weekend. I'm excited for it. Anyways, I know you're probably out on that, but I'm excited. Regardless, here's what I come with, Mike. Jason Tatum. I'm coming with this. We always bat down on Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum, now I want to be clear before I even say this. I have not listened to a single NBA podcast. I didn't listen to Simmons. I didn't listen to The Mismatch. I didn't listen to The Low Post because I wanted to have our first discussion without me having any outside influences on anything that's being said. I don't want it. Jason Tatum, from behind the three-point arc in the series, is 7 of 14. Pretty good, right, Mike?
Pretty good.
Do you know what he is inside the three-point arc?
Well, I was just looking at the box scores before we came on because I kind of thought that going through almost player by player would be a good way to sort of analyze where we are in the final. So I like that. I like it. 11 of 36 he is from the field.
Yeah, which would make him inside the three-point arc.
4 of 22?
Yeah, 4 of 22. So I've got this, I don't know, NBA.com. I just Googled NBA final stats, and I have a shot chart of I can look at every single player. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to look at Jason Tatum because I know he had a good three-point shooting game in game two, at least in the first half. I don't know what happened in the second half, but because that's when the Golden State decided to just the win. The game became what the rest of the playoffs have been in the second half. It was funny because I texted my dad. He's like, are you watching this ironically Jurassic Park thing that's on NBC tonight? And I'm like, no, I'm watching the Golden State game. He's like, I flipped it on. Golden State was up 22 and I turned it off. And I was like, sounds about right. That's what the NBA playoffs have been.
73-38 in the third quarter, Golden State. 73-38.
That's pretty gross.
Yeah, the aggregate score. So, yeah, the third quarter has not been kind to Boston. Although Golden State's always been good throughout this run, they've always been good in the third quarter. Always.
I mean, so here's my next question. Like, it clearly Steph Curry's been the best player in the series so far, right?
All right, let's stick. Yeah, I would say let's stick with Tatum though. Give me your Tatum. Where are you going with the Tatum take?
Well, I'm just going that Tatum is not there. He's not. Listen, I'm almost ready. Okay, I'm going to pull this up. Hold on. Like, Jaylen Brown's been just as bad. I want to be clear here. Like, he's four of, what is he? No, he's 5 of 17 from behind the arc. 5 of 17 from behind the arc. At least inside the arc, he's been 10. He's 10 of 23. So at least he's more like along the lines. Listen, when Marcus Smart is your best shooter, that's not a good sign in the playoffs. Now he's not scoring a lot of points. And when I was watching the first game, game one, Mike, I watched the first game from it to completion, like beginning to end, because that game was at least competitive. The first quarter, when Steph had the huge 21 point, I swear they were like just like, Marcus Smart, take the shot. Marcus Smart, please keep shooting. And he made them. Now, he took a lot in that first quarter. He took a lot of shots in that first quarter of that game. I feel like he shot like 5 threes and was like 2 of 5 or 3 of 5 in the first quarter. And I was like, Boston can't live by this. Like, they can't. Now, they obviously pulled the game out, and, you know, that was because Horford was fantastic. I mean, he was great. Derek White was great in that first game. Here's my problem. If these role players have to be great and Jason Tatum doesn't step up, Boston isn't going to win the series, okay? And I know they won the first game, and everyone was like, oh, man, Tatum didn't even play good, and they won the game. Well, yeah, Horford scored 30 points, and Derek White was, like, what, 7 of 11 from behind the arc in that game? Like,
they were Horford, Smart, and Derek White combined to go 15 of 23 from three.
So, I mean, you can't count on that if you're Boston. Like, you can't. Like, that would be like, I don't know, what's the analogy for the Cavs? That would be like, can't even say Korver.
Listen, the analogy
that
would
be like the first iteration of the Cavs, Danielle Marshall, Eric Snow, and someone else getting a bunch of threes. I'm sorry. I just can't, you can't buy into that.
But the analogy really is, this is why the playoffs have become, this was our whole topic of discussion the last two times we've been on, is so much of what your success is when you win or lose is, do your role players make threes or not? And if your role players are going to make threes, then you're either going to be right in the game if the other team's role players are making threes, or you're going to win if the other team's role players aren't making threes. And to this point, that's held true in this series, because that first game, Boston was 21 of 41, and Golden State, I think, made 19. I think they were like 19 for,
yeah, but that was
44
all
or something, I mean, like that. But still, I'm just saying, from a 3-point standpoint, it wasn't a destruction from the 3-point line. So therefore, you ended up with a close game. Now, I know Boston ended up winning by 12, and they had that outrageous fourth quarter. But for the most part, with 3 minutes to go, it was 106-103 Boston. So that game comes down to the wire because the 3-point shooting was basically even.
The fourth quarter mattered in that game.
Right.
Like, the fourth quarter in this news game was not good.
No. As soon as Poole hit that three at the end of the third quarter, it was over. All right, let's jump back. I want to talk about Tatum because I have a question for you when it comes to what you think Jason Tatum should be doing, could be doing. What do you want him doing if you're Boston? What do you want him doing if you're Golden State? So in the first game, He shoots 3 for 17, but he kicks out 13 assists, NBA Finals record for a guy in his first Finals game. Broke the record set by Jordan, John Stockton, Russell Westbrook, and maybe Magic, I'm not sure. But there was a bunch of guys that had 12. But anyway, he dishes out 13 assists, doesn't shoot the ball well, 3 for 17. Second game, comes out, gets 21 points in the first half, and then gets 7 in the third quarter, and then basically doesn't play in the fourth because the game's over. But certainly didn't play well and have the kind of impact that if you're Boston, you hoped he was going to have, despite the fact that he scored 28. So my question for you is, if you're Golden State, how much do you want to test Tatum's ability to beat double teams by getting the ball out of his hands? In other words, how much do you want to double Tatum versus how much do you want to just say, hey, we're going to guard him straight up. If we get a switch and a screen and roll, even if it's Curry, even if it's Poole, whatever, we'd rather have this guy going and trying to score, or do you run an extra guy at him and put Boston in a situation where with ball movement, they can maybe get one of their role players and open three. And now the first two games would lead you to think that in game one, they made him give the ball up. He gave it up and those guys hit shots. In the second game, he doesn't give it up nearly as much. His other guys aren't hitting threes at the same rate. And so Golden State has better success. So if you're going forward, if you're Steve Kerr, would you rather have Jason Tatum trying to go one-on-one and score on guys, or would you rather double him and try to get it out of his hands and make some of these other guys beat you? Which strategy do you think is better?
That's a tough. I mean, Tatum, if I don't know what the advanced stats would be on Tatum if Tatum, all the passes Tatum made and people made shots, because Boston was pitiful in the second half of game two. Like, they were pitiful. So I don't know if how many more assists. Let's just say he gets 3 more assists. Like, I think the strategy is to force the ball out of Tatum's hands because, I mean, in my opinion, Tatum is the best player on that team, right? Do we agree on that? Like, he's the best player on this team. Okay. Yes. But here's the difference, and I don't like to always compare him to LeBron, but when LeBron steps on the floor in a playoff game situation, you know what you're getting from him. You know you're getting 25, at least 25, probably 25-7-7.
You're getting 25-8-8 is what I was going to say.
I'm down in that 7-7 because he's getting a little older, Mike.
That's fine.
Father Time,
that's fine.
Right?
That's Father fine. Father Time. Father Time. He's undefeated, but he's having a hard time beating LeBron.
Anyways, so we know what we're getting with LeBron. When Steph's on the floor, you know he's averaging 30.5 points a game in the series. You know you're getting 30 points. Right now, you're the best player on this team, and we don't know what we're going to get from you. And that's a problem, Mike. That's a huge problem. But at the same time, if I'm Golden State, I do what I did game two. I think he still passed the ball, and I think guys just didn't make shots. I think they did a lot of the same things that they did in game one. They made some adjustments. And listen, Steve Kerr is going to make adjustments. Heck, he's got 3 days between games to make adjustments. So who knows what we're going to see to start the game tomorrow, okay? Now, it's in Boston. That's good for Boston, perhaps. But I just – my big thing is this, Mike. I just don't think that the Boston Celtics can win an NBA championship when your best player is Jason Tatum. He is not screaming to me, difference maker. I mean, here's a question, Mike. Say Boston wins the series. Do you envision after watching the first two games that Jason Tatum is going to be the NBA Finals MVP? Because I sure as hell don't. There's no way after watching those first two games. Now, things could change, but based on what I've seen so far, there's no way, right?
Well, there's a way. The way is he had 13 assists in the first half, in the first game, and he had 28 points in game two. And if Boston wins this series, they're going to have to win it with a very, very good Jason Tatum. Now, maybe not great, because maybe the role players step up and play an outsized role, but they're not winning this series without a really, really good Jason Tatum. I think if Tatum doesn't play better than he's played in these first two games, I don't think Boston can win the series. So I would counter that by just saying I can see the path to Tatum winning it, only because if they're going to win the series, it's hard to envision somebody else on that team scoring enough, doing enough, being a focal point enough to take that MVP away from Tatum. Which is typically how it goes, right? Your best player, it's very rare where you have the Andre Iguodala winning the finals MVP when Steph Curry's clearly the best player in 2015. Like, that rarely happens. Now, could it happen? Sure. But I'd be willing to say if the Celtics win this series, give me
Steph Curry's 95%. Winning the MVP?
No. Give me a 95% chance that it's Tatum. So that goes back to my question.
If LeBron's not winning the MVP in a losing cause in 2015, no one else is ever doing it. Sorry.
No, I agree. So going back to Tatum, I think what you have to do, I think, and this goes to kind of your point of Tatum's inconsistency, if I'm Golden State, I want Tatum to have to beat me. I don't want to get beat by wide open shots by Al Horford, wide open shots by Derek White. I want those guys to have a guy near them. So when they catch the ball, somebody's right there. They have to put it on the floor. Al Horford can't stand there and get his jumper off and have 3 seconds to look at the rim and casually take the shot. Derek White, same thing. You got to get up on him. You got to make him put it on the floor. And if you do that, I just think that the likelihood of those guys shooting 15 for 23 combined like they did in game one along with Smart, to me, that the odds of that happening are very, very low. So I'd rather take my chances with, that's not to say you just leave whoever's guarding Tatum, hey man, just go one-on-one completely and you just ignore him and never send help or never have guys faking at him and getting back, or you never double him at all. But if I'm Golden State, I would want Tatum to beat me as a scorer. Now, the counter to that is, of all Tatum's skills, scoring's probably his best one. But I still think that if you double him and you let him kick out and then you have to get into rotations as the Warriors, eventually Boston's proven to be a pretty unselfish team. They're going to find eventually an open shot. And then if those guys knock them in, you're going to lose. And so I'd rather see Golden State force Tatum to be a scorer. And let's find out. Is he a finals MVP? I think I've been pretty clear in my thought that I agree with you that I don't think.
Here's a question. Do you like him or James Harden more?
Oh, Tatum's a better. Tatum, I would much rather. If you ask me which guy I would rather build a team around, even now, clearly the Harden that we have now, it's not even a debate. But let me go back to prime Harden. I would much prefer to build my team around Jason Tatum than I would around James Harden.
Okay. I think Tatum's a more
well-rounded player. The fact that he plays both ends of the floor, I would definitely rather build around Jason Tatum. But I think Tatum's offense is his scoring is the best part of his offensive game. I still don't think he's not on the level of passing as Harden, as LeBron, as Luka. He's not that kind of passer. So all that being said, though, if I'm Golden State, I want to make the guy score, because I just don't know, and I've said this many times, I'm not sure, just like you mentioned, is Jason Tatum good enough to be the best guy on a championship team? We're going to find out over the course of these next five games. I would argue that at this point in his career, right now, in this moment, I don't think that's true. And if I was Golden State, I'd want to make him prove it. So I would try to stay home as much as I could on the roll guys so that they're not getting easy looks. And I'd make Tatum beat me with tough shots. And if he beats me with tough shots, then maybe I have to adjust. But that's how I'd approach it if I was Golden State and Steve Kerr at this point.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I just think, yeah, I guess you're right. I just think that there's a point where, do I want Jason? Here's my concern. to counterpoint that, I guess, would be.
Sure,
if,
sure.
Say he comes out game three. I mean, it's at home tomorrow night. He comes out game three, and you let him try to beat you, and he drops 40. Does that boost his confidence for the rest of the series? I argue yes. Whereas, if...
Maybe, but here's the thing. This is the weird part of this whole thing to me. And I think that the point you're making is valid, where if you let a guy come out and you let him get in rhythm and you let him start knocking down shots and he has a big game and he says, ooh, man, I got 40 in game three. I got it rolling now. And then maybe he keeps it rolling for the rest of the series. Is that a danger that you could run into? Absolutely. But I think the theme of this playoffs has been role players make threes, you win. Role players don't make threes, you lose. And sure, can a star have a big game and carry you? Yeah, but it feels like more and more and more, especially in this postseason, that really what it's come down to is how many threes collectively is your team going to make? And yeah, maybe your star, if you got Curry might make six, or he might make eight, or he might make 10. But I guarantee if Curry makes 10 and the rest of the Warriors shoot 2 for 22, that they may not win that game, even if Steph goes crazy. And I think it's the same thing. Tatum could have 40, and if Al Horford gets 2 and Marcus Smart has 6 and Derek White shoots 1 for 7 from the floor, that 40-point effort could very well be in a loss. So I'd want to control. It's weird to say, because normally I'm a pretty big believer in teams that are star-driven are the teams that are going to win. But I just feel like this era of basketball is so strange because everybody's shooting so many threes. I mean, most of these games, you look at the team's field goals attempted and very, very close to 50% of a team's shots are from three. And there's such a wider variance than when you're working to get a shot close to the basket the way basketball used to be. There's just more variance. And I would want to make those shots that have a high variance, I'd want to make those shots harder. So if Jason Tatum wants to shoot contested twos with even a defender that's maybe not that stout, but you put a guy in front of him and make him shoot contested twos, you make him drive to the basket and drive into bodies, you put that mileage on him, you put that punishment on him, you make him put it on the floor and attack. And those other guys, you control them. I think you give yourself a better chance to win. And I think that goes on the other side too. Like, to me, if I'm Boston and I want to deal with Curry, I know that over the course of this dynastic run for the Warriors, that the screen roll, the drop off to Draymond, the 4-on-3 attack for Golden State has been something that they've been really, really, really good at. But I'm sorry, if I'm Boston, I don't want to let Steph beat me. I don't want him to beat me with my shooting. I think with Steph, I'd go the opposite route than what I'm talking about with Tatum. I'd make Steph give the ball up and make those other guys beat you, because we said it a couple times that this Golden State team, of all the teams that have made it to the finals, this is by far the worst version of these Golden State teams. And I don't think there's any argument with that.
No, there's no question. I completely agree.
None of these three guys. Steph is still very close to his peak. I don't know if we want to talk at all about Clay. And Clay, by the way,
he's been pitiful.
He's become the new Dion Waiters. He just chucks every time. Every time he touches the ball, man, it is going up. He is shooting every time he touches it.
Clay is currently 4 of 15 from behind the arc.
What's he shooting overall? You have that in front of you?
4 of 15. He's shooting inside the arc. He's shooting 6 of 18. So that makes him 10 of 33.
And it feels like he's shooting every time he gets the ball. Like he's not even looking to pass the ball. He just is trying
to. They asked him today, what is he going to do? He's like, I'm going to just watch my game six tape.
Well, good for you. You can watch as much tape as you want, but you still might want to pass the ball every once in a while.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Well, speaking of terrible, you know what Draymond's shooting for the series?
Well, he was 2 for 12, I know, in game one. I forget what he was in game two.
4 for 15 for the series. I mean, Jordan Poole's been pretty solid. He's been solid.
Well, he was bad in game one. He was terrible in game one.
Yeah, he's been better in game. Like, Looney is actually, like, when you look at Looney playing, he's doing everything you want. He's kind of taken on the Draymond role a little bit from the early iteration, right? Like, I know, like, as far as, like, rebounding, playing good defense, contesting shots, like, do you agree with me on that? Or?
Yeah, the difference in their heyday, the difference between a huge difference in Golden State, one of them, is Draymond. You think back to 2016 and when he had 35 points in Game 7 against the Cavs, and I think he made 7 threes maybe in that game. He just doesn't even look to shoot anymore. When he does, it's grotesque. And Looney,
I'm pretty sure you or I could go out there and shoot at the with better form than Draymond shoots.
I mean,
with
teams. Me. I mean, they're not. Nobody even guards him anymore. I mean, nobody guards him at all. So in Looney, I think he does a lot of the things from an intangible standpoint. Offensive boards, really does a great job defensively. He can move his feet. You can put him on a smaller guy. He reminds me a little bit of kind of the Tristan Thompson role for the Cavs, Looney's not a three-point shooter, but he's a guy that you kind of have to deal with. It's sort of a catch-22, the same way it was with Tristan back during the Cavs run, where you want his offensive rebounding on the floor and you want his switchability on defense.
You know, he can't really provide you any major scoring.
Right, and he doesn't space the floor for you. So if you have Draymond and Looney on the floor, which defensively, that's a good lineup, and they both bring certain strengths, but now you have two guys who are non-shooters, so you're basically looking at the other team gets to just put two guys roaming around in the lane, disrupting things because Draymond and Looney just aren't threats to shoot from the perimeter. So your spacing is messed up, and that's one of the things I think Golden State and Kerr, they're still trying to figure it out, at least when it comes to this series against Boston. Who are the guys that they want to play? Like, Iguodala played 12 minutes in the first game and then didn't play at all in the second game after having not played the entire playoffs. So they're obviously still searching for answers. If you're playing a guy who hasn't played in the playoffs and then he plays 12 minutes and then he doesn't play again in the next game, you're kind of just throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks. I mean, I think there's three guys for Golden State that should clearly be on the floor in any kind of crunch minutes. Curry, Draymond, Wiggins. I think those three guys clearly have to be on the floor. And then Clay, look, if he doesn't play better, I'm not sure you want to play Clay big minutes the way he's been playing. Now, is he still capable? Sure. But he hasn't really shown much in these two games. And like I said, I feel like he's forcing a lot of shots when he catches the ball. So I don't know who the best lineup is. It probably includes Looney.
Yeah, it has to, right?
Probably, but then like I said, the spacing is bad. They've kind of gotten away from the pool party lineup where it looked like early in the playoffs that was going to be the lineup that was going to get a ton of minutes. That team I think they played 2 minutes maybe the other night. It's just
so what's the better name for a lineup? The pool party or the theoretical banana boat?
Well,
what's the better name? I think banana boat's still a better name.
Do you? Banana boat is just, it's iconic because there's a photo of it. So I think in NBA lore, you have to go with banana boat, but pool party is pretty fun. That's a pretty good That's a pretty good pretty good nickname for a group of
NBA players. Now, if they have a pool party and we get a photo of it, then maybe
yeah, then maybe it could all go well. Banana boat. That's right. It would have to be a pretty special photo to rival the banana boat.
Like I look, pink flamingos.
Yeah, there you go, man. Everybody in their speedo. I don't know. We'd have to see what it all entail.
I don't want to see these guys in speedos. Neither do I.
Draymond, game two, just an insane person, talking nonstop, getting in physical. I don't want to call it necessarily altercations.
Doing what he needs to do.
Doing what he needs to do.
The fact that he didn't get a technical foul and get ejected from the game. Do you think he should have gotten ejected for that or not?
Oh my God, yes. Like I haven't watched every single second of every single Golden State game, but I've seen enough of it where the things that he's doing in terms of talking to other players, banging into guys, running them over, putting his legs on top of them, and then every single foul call that occurs, he's just running to the other end of the floor. He's berating officials. He's screaming at people. I just look at it and I go, how do we tolerate this? And I just don't understand how the NBA and the officials let some of the stuff go on that goes on. And look, it's not just Draymond, but he in game two, his behavior was just ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous.
He was acting like a petulant child that didn't get mommy and daddy didn't buy him a present that he wanted at the store.
So you said you didn't listen to any pods, but Zach Lowe had Jeff Van Gundy on, and Van Gundy and Lowe were talking about Draymond, and Van Gundy made a really good point. He said,
Van Gundy made a good point. Oh my gosh.
Made a good point. Well, at least I felt it was a good point. So his point was that when it comes to dealing with Draymond, that Udoka should have a team-wide policy of here's what we're going to do. And either we're going to completely ignore everything he does. We're not going to talk to him. We're not going to say anything back. We're going to let him do whatever. And we're just going to completely ignore him. Everybody, the whole team. You're not coming back him at all. Or conversely, every single time he does something, every single time he says something, you're right back up in him. And he said, if it was me and it was my team, what I'd probably do is I'd have him go back at him every single time. As soon as he starts talking, just start talking back. As soon as he starts pushing, start pushing back. And Van Gundy's thought is that if you do that, he didn't really say it, but I think what he was getting at is you're going to escalate it eventually to the point where it's a double tech or he gets one early. He goes, I'd send somebody out there to try to get him to get a tech early. And then I'd just make sure that we were responding to every single thing that he did in hopes that they'd eventually get a double technical and he'd get kicked out of the game. That's basically what Van Gundy was trying to get across. And I think he's right. I think you have to, if you let this guy just run rampant and behave the way he is, I think you got to come right back at him as hard as possible and force the referees to make a decision. You're telling me if Grant Williams goes out there and just matches him talking back, pushing him, shoving him, that they can't get a double technical at some point during the game. Draymond's behavior is just ridiculous. And I know he's a good player. And I know if he's on your team, he'd be a guy that you'd love. But watching him from afar and having rooted against him many, many, many times, I find him to be one of the most unlikable players in the NBA by far.
Yeah. I agree. Listen, they have to come up with a game plan to handle Draymond because he's going to continue to act that way because Draymond's going to Draymond. Like, right? I mean, he's not going to change his behavior.
No, he's not going to change. If anything, it's gotten worse.
Unless he punches someone in the lower nether regions, yes. Then he might change his behavior.
Well, his behavior will be watching on a TV instead of out in the game, so that could very well be a possibility. It just seems crazy to me that he's allowed to get away with the things that he's allowed to get away with. And then conversely, it also seems like, man, if he were to get kicked out and miss a game, and then they would go on to lose the series, and he would be responsible for two huge mistakes that got him kicked out of games. And if his team had won those games, that they could have won titles those years, that's a pretty big asterisk to carry around on your career. So let's hope it happens. Yeah. No, I'm not rooting for Boston. I'm not rooting for Boston. When you're watching the games, are you still gravitating towards Golden State?
100%. Well, I will say it. I said it to my students. Today was the last day, and I said it to my students today. My last day with students, I still have a day tomorrow. I said, my 6-year hatred of the Warriors is outweighed by the fact that I have a lifetime hatred for the Celtics. I've not liked any Celtics team. There's only one Celtics team I kind of liked, and it was the year Ricky Davis was on that team, and it was just comical to watch him play basketball still. That's literally the only Celtics team that I had any interest in watching. I don't like the Celtics. The Warriors are at least enjoyable to watch. Ball movement, just everything going on the floor. I don't enjoy watching the Celtics offense. I don't know if you feel the same way. I don't enjoy watching it. And while it can sometimes be effective, I just don't like it. A lot of one-on-one. It's a lot of LeBron ball, but they don't have LeBron. I don't like the Celtics. And I just don't enjoy watching them play. So I'm going to root for the Golden State Warriors. I feel really gross about it. But
Here's what I'll say. It takes a special amount of hatred for a particular team to get me to be, and I think rooting for is maybe too strong of a word, but I definitely am leaning when I'm watching the games. I'm leaning towards seeing the Warriors win, wanting the Warriors to win. And so that hatred that I've had since I was a kid for the Celtics, definitely I can feel it when I'm watching the games. And there's no shred of me that is even remotely considering rooting for the Celtics. And that's saying a lot with the distaste that I have for the Warriors. So, yeah, I've been rooting for the Warriors, and it was interesting just to hear the way people were talking about this series after game one, where the sky was falling for Golden State and, oh my gosh, Boston is huge and they're menacing and their defense, and how's Golden State ever going to score? And it's amazing how short people's memories are, that game ones, do they mean something? Sure, they mean something, but inevitably adjustments are made, things happen differently, and you end up with a completely different result in game two. And now I think people coming into game three are sort of back to where they were at the beginning of the series, where I think if you thought the Warriors were going to win before the series, that's probably where you're sitting now. If you thought Boston was going to win before the series, that's probably where you're sitting now. And it's just interesting to hear different people talk about each of these games and the way they analyze them and think about them. And yet, after every game is different, and teams are always making adjustments. And I think these two teams are going to continue to make adjustments. I don't think they've really quite figured out what the other one can or can't do. And I think we're going to continue to see the teams experiment and try different things and different types of defensive coverage against the pick and roll, depending on who's involved in it and the switching and whether or not they're going to trap and blitz and try to get the ball out of Tatum's hands or try to get it out of Curry's hands. And then who do you want to force the shot to in your rotations? There's just so many things that right now go into this series that make it, despite the fact that it's hard to have a rooting interest for me, it is an interesting series from a basketball standpoint. Because like you said, there's definitely two different styles. Boston plays a little bit more of the bully ball LeBron style, where the ball is probably going to go through Tatum at some point And then on the Golden State side, you just have all the movement and action, and you have Curry just getting so much attention wherever he is that it opens up opportunities for other players to score. So I still think it's going to come down to which teams' role players are going to make shots. And
yeah.
I mean, that's why I'm not sure that this is a great place for NBA basketball to be in the finals in 2022. Is it's dependent upon whether Al Horford, Derek White, and Grant Williams make threes on one side, and it's dependent upon Jordan Poole, Andrew Wiggins, and Klay Thompson on the other side, whether those guys make threes. I'm not sure that's a great place for the league and the game where we want to be, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I think, like you said, that's kind of where we're at this point, right? I mean, they got to figure, like you've said before, they got to figure it out. And I don't know what that it's going to look like, but they'll have to figure it out, right? They have to.
I think there has to be something where, I don't know. I just think teams are so incentivized to shoot threes because of the math. And because the skill level has gotten higher and higher and so many guys can shoot it now, that I don't know, with the line where it is and with the skill level only continuing to grow and widen in terms of the number of guys that can shoot it, I just think we're going to continue to have this system where the stars and the best players are still going to shoot some mid-range shots and get to the rim. But we're at a point now where all these guys are just they're just firing threes. And when you do that, you're going to get a wide variance where some games you're going to make 55% or 50%. And if you do that, you got a really good chance to win. In other games, you're going to shoot 20%. And when you shoot 20%, you're probably going to lose. And that's, I'm not sure that's the best place for the league to be. Now, clearly in the past, field goal percentage matters and you shoot, but there just wasn't as wide of a variance because teams were working to get shots that were closer to the basket that were higher percentage shots. And I don't know. I don't know where we go from here.
I don't know.
On a macro level.
I don't think we're going to solve that at 12:50 at night on a.
No, I don't. I don't. I don't either.
So
I don't either. All right. Anybody else from the Celtics that jumps out at you that you want to talk about something specific to this series or what you've seen so far? Robert Williams. I mean, can they keep playing Robert Williams?
He's listed as questionable tomorrow. I mean, could they put him in the every other game plan? Like, I don't know. He doesn't look good.
He doesn't look good. Yeah, he doesn't. He just can't. He can't move the way that he was moving before he was healthy.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought Pritchard had a good game one, but once again, that's that comes down to he was making his shots. I don't really know that he got any opportunity in game two, right? He hardly played any minutes in game two. So, I don't know. I don't know. The Celtics, once again, it comes down to are those few role players, like is Derek White, Al Horford. I don't really want to even say Jaylen Brown because he's not a role player. Is Marcus Smart? Are they making their shots? If they're making their shots, then they have a chance to win. If they're not making their shots, they don't have a chance. The end.
I agree. That's why I would stay home on Tatum. And I mean, I would stay home on those guys, and I would make Tatum beat me, say, hey, buddy, get 40 on us. And I'd take away all those other guys. That's how I would play it if I was Golden State. I'd try to limit the amount of times that I had to double Tatum. I'd make Tatum go and beat me, whether if I'm switching or whether I end up hedging and getting back or whatever it is that I'm trying to do defensively out of the screen roll. When Tatum's hunting one of the weaker defenders on Golden State, I would just say, hey, you think you can beat up Steph Curry? Go for it. And just try to score over him and stay home on those other guys and make Tatum put up big numbers. That's what I personally would do if I was Steve Kerr. So
we'll see if you and Steve Kerr are in the same masterclass of coaching, Mike.
We will see. We will see. We will see if that's the case. I'm not sure it is, but we'll see.
So
What about on the Warriors side?
I don't know. I think we pretty much talked about everyone, right? I mean, who else do we have to talk about? I guess we haven't really talked about Wiggins. Wiggins hasn't been very good. He's been okay.
Yeah, he's been fine. He hasn't been great.
But he hasn't been god-awful, right?
No, defensively, he's been pretty good, I think. And offensively, you probably would want a little bit more out of him. But the reality is that he's been fine. He hasn't been terrible.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much talked about everyone else in the Warriors, right? Is anyone else?
Well, we talked Draymond. We talked Clay. Clay's got to be better. He was seriously, I was watching game two in that first half, and he looked like, honestly, the first name that came to mind was Deion Waiters. Like, this guy wants to shoot every time he touches it. I think Gary Payton coming back, that's the only guy we really haven't talked about that's kind of in the mix of guys that are really playing.
Yeah,
Payton
took like five shots, right? I mean,
well, he's not going to score.
He's a defensively
right kind of guy. You put him in there, and he's a guy who, if you want him and Jordan Poole are actually similar size players from a height standpoint, but Poole obviously is much better offensively, and Peyton's much better defensively. So I think depending on how the game's going and what you need to do, and one of those two guys could be in your final finishing five, depending on whether you're looking for defense or whether you're looking for offense. But
yep.
I think Peyton being back definitely helps them and gives them a little bit more lineup flexibility. Do you think we see Iguodala anymore this series?
I mean, no. He's old, man. I think he's time for retirement.
Yeah, okay. I don't think we're going to see Iguodala the rest of the series. And we start talking about, again, Warriors teams historically, the fact that you don't have Iguodala and how good he was from 2015 to 2018. He was a key part of that Warriors dynasty. So I know I interrupted you before I said, was there anybody else on Golden State? So I don't know if you remember what your point was or if we want to just go straight to predictions.
I don't remember what my point was.
All right. Sorry.
I don't remember at this point. I think Golden State, I still am going to stick with my Golden State in six.
Okay. I'm going to stick with Golden State in seven, which is what I originally said. What about game three? How do you see game three playing itself out?
I think it's going to be a close game, Mike. We're going to have a close one tomorrow. I'm going to take Golden State tomorrow.
I am too. I think we get a signature Steph Curry game tomorrow. I think he goes for 35 plus tomorrow and gets them that game three victory. And then I think Boston probably comes back and wins game four. But I think Golden State is going to be ready to come out and play. They're clearly not going to be intimidated by the crowd. And I just see Curry ready to have a signature game. I think this could be a game where – go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, I agree. I think that we're going to come out of four games and it's going to be 2-2. I think it's going to be 2-2 after four games. And then I think Golden State wins game five. I think Golden State wins game five, and then they go to Boston and they do what they did to the Cavs and close it out in Cleveland. But they close it out in Boston this time. And then I will be super excited. Bill Simmons' dad might die in the stands watching Golden State get the trophy. Getting really mad.
Well, let's put it this way. I'll be sad that NBA basketball is over and we won't have any more games to watch, but it will be fun because we'll be heading into the NBA silly season with the draft and free agency, which is always fun, and we can bring the Cavs back
We're going to have to compare whether the free agency this year is better than the free agency last year, with it being last year being such a shortened free agency and craziness. I really enjoyed that. It'll be a little more drawn out, but we'll have to see.
It'll still be fun, and it'll be fun to see what happens in the draft. So we will see.
We will see when we return to our podcast. I would think, Mike, and you can tell me if you're wrong, I think I would like to say that I think the two of us can at least...
We should be able to get one extra one in between now and next Tuesday.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think our goal should be to try to get one episode in, at least one episode after.
What night is game four? Is game four on Saturday or Friday?
Friday. So they play Wednesday, Friday, and then they don't play till Monday. So it's Wednesday, Friday, then it's Monday, Thursday, Sunday.
All right, I could see there being a slight chance we could get one in on Friday. I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah, Friday or Saturday, I think it's doable.
All right. Let's pencil that in. I like it.
We don't have any graduation parties to prepare for.
No, graduation party's over. It was a big success, so we're done with that. We're moving on. Camp season's here. We're 2 days in. It's been good so far. It's been a lot of fun. Looking forward to the rest of the summer for that. A couple more weeks of camp to look forward to.
Camp season. I still have to go to work tomorrow, Mike.
Oh, man. What? Work? Where? I don't even – what are you talking about?
It's 1 a.m. I got to be at work at 7 tomorrow morning.
I don't even know where I work anymore. I forget. In June and July, I just forget.
Working in a gym. That's where you work.
I guess that's true. I work at camp, which is a lot more fun than real work. You can never complain when it's camp season. I will never complain about that. It is a lot of fun. All right. That being said, we want to thank you for checking out tonight's NBA episode of the Hoopheads podcast. And thank you for listening. We will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.